This is Scott Allen from odecoded.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Coon from lazycoder.com.
Hello and welcome to Herding Code. This episode is being recorded on May 20th, 2009. Tonight we're talking to Dustin Campbell. Dustin, can you introduce yourself, please?
Hey guys, I'm Dustin. I work for the Visual Studio team. Actually, on the Visual Studio Languages team, I focus primarily on the Visual Basic IDE, which means like all the editing features. I also own the debugging features across the managed languages. So whatever you see in the autos, the watches, the logos windows, and anything that shows up like that in the debugger, I kind of run and own all of that. And then also, I've been working extensively on C# IntelliSense for Visual Studio 2010. So kind of run the gambit as far as all of that, kind of work across all of the, at least all of the managed languages, the primary managed languages outside of like the dynamic languages. I don't tend to work much on Iron Ruby or Iron Python, but pretty much C#, VB, and F#. Also, before I was at Microsoft, yesterday was my 1 year anniversary at Microsoft. Before that, I was at DevExpress, where I worked as a developer lead on the Code Rush and Refactor projects for, the last 5 years. So, that's me, man.
So the new exciting thing is that we just got beta 1 of Visual Studio 2010.
Yeah, everybody just got it, right? It just came out for the world today, right? Publicly available.
One thing that was interesting was as I was installing, I noticed there's the web installer.
Yeah.
And it was a five megabyte download, and then it kind of just ran the install, and it seemed to install pretty quickly without a huge download.
Yeah. Yep. Exactly. So there's been work there on the setup to streamline kind of the web experience so that you can kind of figure out, okay, I only need these bits and pieces, and it'll download and install those for you.
One of the huge things that's different about Visual Studio 2010 is the WPF-based IDE, and I mean I don't even know where you'd start with something like that. Was it something that, you know? I mean, did you just go way back to the drawing? You must have. Visual Studio is based on goes back. Some of it goes back to InterDev, right?
Actually, the original. I believe the original native editor that has lived in Visual Studio for a while did come from like the InterDev code base way back when. That's like ages ago, man. How old are you, John?
Have you seen the movie The Curious Case of Benjamin Button?
I'm pretty sure I was not using InterDev.
So another unspoken rule. There's no making fun of John's progeria.
Oh. Ouch.
Wow. So it's kind of been the story of Visual Studio, like every other release, to tear it apart and, put it back together again. Right. So, I guess it was VisualStudio.net 2002 was the first time that, they kind of put C++ and VB and this brand new language C# all together under one roof in one application. And that was kind of a big undertaking. And then in 2003, there was a smaller release that just kind of built on what they'd done in 2002. And then in 2005, a similar thing, right? Tear it apart, put it back together again, with a brand new look and feel and a whole lot of new features. And then 2008 was a smaller release as far as, the shell, which is kind of the toolbars and menus and all those pieces and the document windows and tool windows we call the shell. As far as the shell went, Visual Studio 2008 was a relatively small release. And then here we are again with Visual Studio 2010, tearing it completely apart and putting it back together, stitching it back together with managed code this time, which has been pretty challenging. Because a lot of it is still native, right? So we have this managed shell. So all the toolbars, the document windows, the tool windows are managed, but not all the content for those tool windows are managed, right? So the Solution Explorer is still native, like a native tree view control. And a lot of the windows are still native code sitting on top of managed. The IDE code bases are mostly native still, so the C# language support like IntelliSense and QuickInfo tooltips and those sorts of things are still native. And so really Visual Studio is in Visual Studio 2010, it's probably one of the largest real world COM interop applications that I'm aware of. It's just massive, right? So yeah.
So you're saying it's been like torn up and rewritten 90 times. Is it in the course? Well, exaggeration.
Refactored, John.
Refactored. Thank you.
Yes.
So was that something that, you know, during, I mean, this is probably, I would guess, the most major one. Was that something during this work that was kind of a consideration to make it so that you don't have to tear up and refactor quite as much in the future?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think this time around, moving it to managed code, moving into like a managed editor that's not instead of stitching things together with COM, you know, at least on the managed side, things are stitched together with Beth, and the idea is to make something that with an architecture such that we can continue to innovate on it at a much quicker pace. Right. Right now, it's challenging. It takes a long stretch of time to build a new feature for the IDE if we were still in this COM native world, right? But we can iterate on things much faster, writing them, you know, in managed code. And it's so I see the Visual Studio 2010 being in the long run an amazing thing, right, for Visual Studio and for development of Visual Studio and for the future. But getting into it has been like birthing a rhinoceros. Right, it's been just like this massive undertaking. I don't even want to talk about that anymore. That's just. I can't believe I said that.
It's the horn that gets here, right?
I think so. I think it's the horn.
So let's cut to the chase. Your favorite new feature of the IDE.
My favorite new feature of the IDE.
You gotta pick one of your kids and say that's my favorite.
Yeah, and I'm gonna pick the IntelliSense features. Have you guys installed the beta and played with it yet?
Yes.
Yes, Scott. Did you notice anything different about IntelliSense?
No.
No. So,
I mean, the autocomplete. There's differences in the autocomplete, right? I mean, that's
yeah. So in Visual Basic, right? In 2008, we started filtering the completion list as you typed. Right. And so we just did it by prefixes. Right. So if I were typing console.wr, it would, you know, filter down to like write and write line. And we took that a bit further in Visual Studio 2010. And we did a filtering IntelliSense also for C#, but not just by prefixes, but also extending it to do substring matches, which break on word boundaries. So if I type like DLI, it won't match read line. If I'm at console.dli, it won't match read line. But if I type console.li, it'll match write line and read line. So it's kind of on these word boundaries. So if you're looking around for something and you remember a word in it, it's easy to find just by typing that word. And then also less discoverable, but if you're like a power kind of IntelliSense guy, I tend to try and use this quite a bit these days, and I'm finding it's making me much faster. And that's we have a camel case filtering for IntelliSense too. So if I were to type all in all capital letters, it'll match the uppercase letters of an identifier like a camel cased identifier. So if I type console.W L, it'll match console.write line. So that's probably my favorite feature. It's lower key, like it's not, you know, in your face, but it's one of those features that just absolutely makes you write faster and just very naturally extends what was already there. So I like those kinds of features. So.
So maybe one of the reasons that I didn't really notice that as much is, well, I haven't done a whole lot of coding inside of 2010 yet. Mostly mm-hmm. what I've done is just little, you know, snippets trying to see what I can do with dynamic and some of the other types that the 4.0 is adding. But I've been using CodeRush and Refactor Pro a lot lately. And a lot of the find by type and find by file or find files and mm-hmm. those kinds of features in both CodeRush and ReSharper include a lot of the filtering that Visual Studio is now including in things like IntelliSense and other things like that. So yeah, can I ask the question, I think at the MVP summit earlier, you know, are you guys trying to kill off CodeRush, or why can't you put more CodeRush and ReSharper features inside of the IDE rather than making us install a third-party tool? I don't know if you can talk to this as much, but you know, where you draw the line between...
We're trying to kill our third parties, is that what you're asking about?
Well, it's not intentionally, but maybe you're trying to embrace and extend your third parties.
Well, it's kind of funny, right? Because you started that question by describing a feature that we were introducing in Visual Studio 2010. We call it like Navigate 2. So if you're in Visual Studio 2010, you type control comma. It'll bring up a window that navigates to files and symbols. Also includes camel casing, filtering, and substring filtering. So it's kind of funny that you asked if we're trying to kill the competition by describing a feature that we indeed went ahead and implemented. But the answer is no. We're not trying to kill – I don't want to say our competition, right? They're our partners, right? And so our philosophy with the IDE is not to have 150 refactorings in the box or to implement, you know, kind of the whole breadth of features, but instead to try and put like the core features in the box and then to build an ecosystem. So one of the things that's truly awesome about the WPF editor is its extensibility model, which is you can literally do anything with it. I mean, it's just amazing. We're not taking as much advantage of it in Visual Studio 2010 as we could because we've been trying to get back to parity with Visual Studio 2008 behavior, and a lot of time has been spent doing that. But there are amazing things you can do with that, and that's just an example of one place where we want to take this with the entire product, build an extensibility model that our third parties can just party on and build features that, you know, would have been a tremendous struggle to build, you know, in the past, or, you know, the kinds of things that you look at in Code Rush and Refactor or ReSharper and you're just amazed at, like, how the heck did they do that? And then we're giving them an editor and extensibility models to allow them to take their imaginations even further. And we're totally excited about that. So that's kind of our philosophy, our plan with that. So it's not about replacing everything those guys do, just kind of taking the core pieces and then give them the tools to go party.
So I think the first kind of extension that needs to be built is the obviously the Tetris Visual Studio extension, where you can hit like Control Alt Shift Window T and start a game of Tetris inside the code window. Or maybe that's how you refactor.
You refactor with Tetris. the pieces of code just kind of spin, and you hold the space bar until they're like right in the right position, right? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think so, man.
So obviously, you know, a huge part of what those products like Code Rush and Refactor do is just interacting with the editor and providing all those sort of snazzy visualizations and little tips and stuff. And, you know, that stuff seems like it's going to be a heck of a lot easier to do in the new editor. But the other big thing that they do is actually, you know, parsing the languages and providing the different kinds of IntelliSense and, you know, really kind of grokking the code. Mm-hmm. Is that level of extensibility also exposed in the new world, or is that something they're going to have to continue to do sort of on their own?
Well, unfortunately for Visual Studio 2010, they will have to do that on their own. It's something that we're definitely looking at and are in our plans for the future to build something that, again, that they can party on. So that, because one of the big problems with a lot of these tools is that, yes, they have to kind of duplicate everything that Visual Studio is doing as well, right? So, you know, we have our compilers there and we're building up our symbol tables and, you know, our kind of logic for determining, you know, finding all the references to an identifier and that sort of thing. And, you know, both ReSharper, both the JetBrains, the DevExpress guys, the Whole Tomato guys, all the companies out there that are building tools like this have to essentially duplicate all that. And it turns into a big working set problem, right? It turns into a big memory problem. And so, you know, it's definitely in our plans. It's something we're trying to figure out what the best story is and trying to loop all of these guys in early so that we know that we're going to meet their needs with whatever we end up building in the future. But unfortunately for 2010, it's, you know, tearing it apart and putting it back together again in WPF will prove to be enough, or we would be, you know, building this thing for the next few years.
So kind of a side benefit to building the editor in WPF is that WPF will get better. It won't suck so much in terms of performance over performance over like a remote desktop has always been.
Don't sugarcoat it, man. Yeah, really. No, it's true, right?
Yeah, you know, like startup time and things like that. They've, you know, been chiseling away at. But I think having DevDiv knocking on their door, you know, 24/7 saying, hey, yeah, my IDE, yeah, it's still slow.
Absolutely. I believe there's an integration coming actually pretty shortly. That'll be I don't know when that'll come in, but specifically there are like some improvements over like terminal services, because you know, so many of us are, you know, before I was on the phone here, I was, you know, using terminal services to my desktop back at the office and using Visual Studio 2010, and it was slow, right? So yeah, there's actually specific improvements coming really soon for that very, very reason. A couple of other things that are coming are a lot of performance fixes, a lot of bug fixes. You know, we've pounded on it pretty hard. It is the reality. It's a huge application to put into WPF, or really into any technology. So yeah, it's only going to make it better.
So you're talking about, you know, the WPF improving in ways that can help out your performance. Were there some like specific things that you found as you were working with this that, you know, tricks or important things to do as you're working with WPF for performance?
Yeah, don't use COM interop with it. The slowest things that we've found have been, I think, or the large part of the performance has been about for us has been about COM interop. You know, when the CLR was designed, the like the 95% or 90% case they kind of figured with COM interop was, hey, we're going from managed code and interoping with some native COM thing, right? Some legacy piece. And in Visual Studio, that's kind of reversed. And it turns out that that's a much slower path, going native and then interoping with managed. And so there's been a lot of work in that area. And yeah, it's been, and one of the things that has come in for WPF that's really really improved the performance is making sure that everything is native gen. So ngenning the entire thing, ngenning most of Visual Studio managed assemblies has been a big deal about performance. So the WPF 4 stuff, I believe, is ngen by default now.
I thought I'd heard something a while ago that said they were saying that ngenning was they were moving away from ngenning. So that's interesting. This maybe I heard wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, it's for us, it's been a huge performance improvement. So we're doing it in some of our Visual Basic managed components are being ngened, and then all the editor is being ngened and pieces of Visual Studio. Primarily because Visual Studio is only an x86 app for this release. So there's not an x86 or 64-bit. It doesn't run in a 64-bit process. So we're safe to kind of ngen that to the x86 world, and it works fine.
Let's change direction. you're an F-sharp fan, right?
I am an F-sharp fan, that's right.
I think I've heard you talking about doing F-sharp on the weekend with your significant other to relax.
yeah, a little bit. My wife and I will, a couple of evenings we've spent working on Project Euler problems. Are you guys familiar with that site, the website, projecteuler.net?
Yeah.
Yes,
like, you know, math problems for, you know, the first 50 turn out to be kind of easy, or, you know, kind of get intermediate, and they get very quickly, they get pretty hard. The idea is that some of these are these big n space problems that take, to brute force them, take a really long time, and so the idea is to figure out clever algorithms to solve them more efficiently. And so my wife and I will sit at the computer. This is an exciting date night, guys. We'll sit at the computer, pull up a Project Euler problem or two, and we'll implement them in F-sharp together. So, and my wife doesn't speak F-sharp, right? But she speaks mathematics. And so as we write the F-sharp code, we do it in kind of a consume first kind of style, where you're writing your implementation code before you actually, you know, declare things, right? So like I'll use functions before I declare them, and then I'll name them in ways that match words in the Project Euler problem, so she can understand exactly what we're doing, and then we'll go and implement the functions. And it's kind of a nerdy date.
That's hot.
It's a I think she's going to be listening to this, Scott, so hey, you know.
Yeah. Well, where I was going with this was,
yeah.
So you must be pretty excited about F-sharp showing up in Visual Studio 2010.
So yes, it showed up in Visual Studio 2010, which is fantastic. Also today we released another F-sharp CTP, for Visual Studio 2008. So it kind of, you know, shipping at the same time as Beta 1, has all the same feature set, library set, and that sort of thing that's in Visual Studio 2010 beta, but you can download it and continue to use it with Visual Studio 2008.
Cool. I'm kind of curious, how much effort does it take for Microsoft to introduce something new in the file new project area, like a whole new language?
It's taken those guys a lot of time, actually. There's an amazing amount of effort that goes into that, and it's really been impressive to watch. I mean, for all the way from, you know, just getting the thing up and running and loaded in the IDE, but it's all the little detail work, like, you know, making sure that you have a profile with keyboard settings, making sure that things are, you know, set to be localized. And there's just a tremendous amount of work. And on the F-sharp side, there's been a lot of library kind of refactoring, a lot of library work, where it started as a research project. And so it was kind of, you know, it was the compiler and the core library, and then a whole set of just kind of extra stuff that, you know, as researchers, you know, you're building little, you know, building things and trying things out, experimenting with things, and they just kind of all wound up in the F# library. And so there's been a lot of refactoring and pulling some of these things out that weren't, you know, necessarily core to the language, but were really cool extra kind of stuff, and putting them in a separate, you know, area we're calling the F-sharp power pack. And so there's been a lot of just a ton of refactoring in there. And also on the F-sharp side, so there's probably one of the most amazing refactorings is that almost every library function that was more than one word long, right, where the function actually took up more than one word, was renamed. Right, so they changed kind of their naming scheme. It used to, there was some inconsistency with it. There were some that were, you know, camel case, some that were like had underscores in between, and so now everything is sort of camel cased in the all the function names in the F# library. So that was a massive undertaking as well. So they're just it's really impressive to watch those guys put it together, but it's a tremendous amount of work. Luke Hoban and Don Simon, those guys have just done a great job.
Does that include some things with the, what is it, FSI, the interactive console for F#? What is it, the interpreter? Do you know what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. The interactive interpreter thing?
Well, it's not really an interpreter, right? But, I mean, it really compiles F# code and it's building up a dynamic assembly, you know, as you work with it. But yeah, it's a kind of a sort of REPL situation like you'd see in like Ruby or Python, where you can just kind of exploratively kind of build up some code. This is one of the use cases that we see people using F# with. This is kind of the style of coding my wife and I were doing, which was where, you know, we're just kind of build up a little bit of code, execute it in the REPL, and just kind of see it evolve as we go. So the F# interactive window is something, you know, new to Visual Studio. I don't think we really have anything like that yet. It's kind of like we have the immediate window, which is sort of a poor man's sort of REPL, but the F# interactive window is much more powerful. And so we're kind of taking a look at that and, you know, kind of eyeballing it and seeing, you know, I wonder how we could use that in the future in other places.
So that leads to an interesting point. So F# is kind of a first-class citizen, mm-hmm. in Visual Studio now. And yet Ruby and Iron Python are still kind of off to the side. And, you know, so Iron Ruby really hasn't, I don't think they've gotten to the point where they're satisfied with their runtime, but Iron Python seems like it's pretty stable, and they're pretty happy with it, mm-hmm. at least from what I can tell. And I'm just wondering why some of the DLR languages like that aren't included. And, you know, why can't I go file new Iron Ruby project or file new Iron Python project?
Well, I you know, there's a couple of things there, right? First, I don't think Iron Python and Iron Ruby will ever want to be in the box. I don't think they'll ever want to install with Visual Studio, because that ties them then to the Visual Studio development cycle, which is, you know, about every 2 years, right? And Python has been shipping, you know, much more regularly than that, and Ruby has also been shipping much more regularly than that, pushing source out to CodePlex for Python and out to RubyForge for Iron Ruby. So it's not really to their benefit to be in the box, if you understand what I'm saying, because then they'll just kind of be tied to the whole Visual Studio train. But
well,
then
so
also,
why not break that train? why not make it so if we're talking about componentizing and using, mm-hmm. Mef to load things in, why not make the Iron Ruby 9 Python support plugin. I don't know how familiar you are with Eclipse and the kind of their plugin model, but they have this idea of perspectives where you can load up an entire new language and switch to this perspective, and it changes the IDE and adds in new windows and things like that. And it's completely modular, so you don't have to install this if you want to, but you can, mm-hmm. and you can just work within Eclipse like that. So, you know, or maybe this is on the future plans. Maybe this is a Visual Studio, let's say, every 2 years, 2012. Maybe
whatever that turns like out that. To be, yeah. So that was actually the second thing I was going to say, was that, you know, it's kind of in the court of those guys to figure out what kind of Visual Studio support they want, because obviously they could, you know, we have a Visual Studio SDK. If we could get the resources, you know, set aside for that and you know, do the work, we could certainly add, you know, one of the things that ships with the Visual Studio SDK is actually a kind of an Iron Python language service you can build and run inside Visual Studio. And I'd love to see that take off and you know, something that installs with Python, with Iron Python. You could grab the Visual Studio integration. There is a piece they have and they have been doing some work on that. There's a piece called Iron Studio that I believe is still up on I think it's up on Codeplex, and that is some IDE integration for Iron Python. I'm not sure if anything has happened on the Iron Ruby side for that. I'm not sure what's going on there, if anybody's kind of taken the ball and ran with that, but certainly that's something that could be done. Right. And yes, you're right. As we move into like a more componentized Visual Studio, you know, yes, and we are looking at Eclipse and other IDEs out there and the models they use for building up the IDE out of modules like, you know, or perspectives like an Eclipse. And so that's stuff that we want to get to, and we want to push Visual Studio there. But this is kind of one of those releases that's, you know, just kind of getting started to heading that direction. Right. So Visual Studio 2010 is kind of it's an enormous release, and it has just a ridiculous, let's say, added value for developers and architects and everybody else that kind of is involved in the development lifecycle. It's just, as far as, you know, building something that third parties can extend, we're just starting that journey. Okay, so the WPF editor and the shell and those things are just really getting, and putting MEF inside Visual Studio, just kind of getting started in the direction that we want to actually eventually take it.
So I'm looking at the Visual Studio 2010, and right underneath Enhanced User Experience, which is the nice WPF editor we've been talking about, is Parallel Programming. And so this kind of, you know, threaded parallelization of your code has always been kind of difficult to debug and, you know, to write. And so I'm wondering what kind of enhancements in Visual Studio are going to help with help curbing the insanity that is threading.
So there are several things coming in the debugger in Visual Studio 2010 to help with parallel code that the parallels teams and the core debugger guys have been working on. First, there's the parallel tasks, and then there's a new threads window. There's a parallel tasks window so that you can visualize kind of your threads as tasks and see how they interact, right, and how they play at debug time. There's also a historical debugger. I don't know if you guys have seen this. It's kind of crazy. We've been calling it kind of time travel debugging because, you know, it's like Back to the Future, right? Where you can actually, if you stop in the debugger, then you could, instead, you can always, you've always been able to say, okay, I'm going to step over this or step into this. Now you can step backwards, right? And so it records the state of your application, you know, to varying degrees. You can turn the dial way up or, you know, keep it cranked down really low, which is where it's at by default. And you can step backwards to the state of your application. And it also works by kind of taking a time slice approach in multi-threaded situations. So if you have a multi-threaded app, you can step backwards and see, you know, where in time the state of these threads were and what was going on, you know, when things got out of whack or whatever, right? So there's a lot of really new awesome tools. That's really just kind of scratching the surface. There's tons of stuff in Visual Studio 2010 for debugging parallel code.
One thing that's always like surprising to me when I talk to people that work on these kind of efforts, it's like, for instance, talking to the guys on the ASP.NET team and finding out that it's just a handful of people, you know, or talking to other people on teams, and it's like this huge army, you know, working on something. It's like, okay, well, you know, so how big of an effort is this? Like, how many people are working in the area that you're working on, and then just kind of Visual Studio in general?
It's just me, man.
Wow.
No. So in the Visual Studio Languages team, I would say there's probably about 100 folks, you know, and a handful or so. It seems like. I mean, there's but that kind of covers, you know, C# compiler, VB compiler, the DLR, Iron Ruby, Iron Python, F# compiler, F# IDE experience, C# IDE experience, VB IDE experience, management, right? So the teams themselves are relatively small. I think on VB IDE right now we have around like 6 or 7 devs, you know, and about 8, 9 QA members as well. So it's not, they're not enormously large teams. And so that's, this is the, and that's one of the larger groups. Okay. So VBID is one of the larger groups on the Visual Studio Languages team. But within Visual Studio, that's just the Visual Studio Languages, which is, our product unit. And we really, it's Visual Studio Managed Languages, actually. I should mention because C++ is in a different product unit. But within Visual Studio, I think there's 23 product units or so. And some get very large. There's the platform team, which is the team that does the editor, does, the shell, the project system, and those various pieces, kind of those big, architecting pieces. And, that's a much larger team. So, all together, it's quite a few people. I don't want to say a very large number. That'd be completely wrong, right? But I just know that it's not a small team, and there's lots of interdependencies in it. So like with the ASP.NET team, there's going to be a few guys on dynamic data, a few guys on MVC, but you know, over the whole thing, there's a lot more people, right?
So what can we do to avoid kind of the last debacle we had where Visual Studio was kind of baked, but we had to wait for SQL Server 2008 to be done? Is there anything that can be done about that?
I'm not sure what you mean.
No comment.
Well, I mean, it's like, you know, it's the danger of things slipping, right? One of the things that, you know, another good example of that problem wasn't SQL Server. It was, you know, TFS, right? It's Team Foundation Server, which was supposed to ship in between, you know, sometime kind of after 2008. And, it didn't, right? It ended up shipping in Visual Studio 2010. And, it's just kind of the reality of software development. Sometimes, you know, especially with these larger, really, really large, applications that have lots of interdependencies, sometimes dates slip. That's why we don't like to give dates, right? Because they, you know, they inevitably slip. You know, when I was at TechEd, you know, the first question I was asked was, when is Beta 1 coming out? And instead of saying, you know, Monday, I had to say, you know, I'd like to say really soon, but there's always the possibility that some bug will come up that'll cause daemons to come out of the screen and, you know, eat the user, and in which case then we're going to have to slip a little further. Yeah, and it's very unfortunate, right, when it happens with really, really large products like TFS or SQL Server. And yeah, we're working really hard to try and use one of the microspeak phrases, trying to align things, right? Align ship schedules and to make sure that we're because Visual Studio, I mean, as a product is about supporting platforms, right? So it's about supporting, you know, all the different platforms within Microsoft, whether that's SharePoint or Windows or SQL Server or whatever. And so we, for the most part, we try to be very, very focused on, you know, putting something out that allows you to build on those platforms. And sometimes things just kind of miss, unfortunately.
So one of the sort of ongoing things that I kind of feel like happens with Visual Studio is that the sort of larger IDE gets sort of lots of incremental improvements over time. And, mm-hmm. you know, you get server explorers and you get, you know, the test runner and you get all these sort of peripheral things, but the actual like code editing experience doesn't seem to get a huge amount of improvement, you know, maybe not even since Visual Studio 2003. I'm curious what, you know, is there stuff in 2010 where that, you know, I'm really going to feel like more productive in that key area where I'm just sitting down and cranking out code.
Really? Since 2003? You didn't like that, you know, IntelliSense Everywhere and refactoring, you know, in C# in 2005 or any of that?
2000, it was sort of IntelliSense more places, but I wouldn't say everywhere. I mean, like, the designers get better, but, like, that's, yep, you know, not so important to me, especially the web designers, which I never use.
Sure.
So, you know, the actual, like, cranking out of code, I feel like, is... I mean, it did... I'm sure in 2005 it improved. I feel like in 2008 it wasn't a huge...
Oh, I mean, we added code snippets and refactorings and yeah, IntelliSense on every keystroke kind of thing in Visual Studio 2005. So I will question your 2003 comment, sir. But yeah, you know, there's a lot of features in, you know, we've already talked about them in 2010. One of the focuses we wanted to have for Visual Studio 2010, because in the last release in Visual Studio 2008 was very much a language oriented release, right? It was all very much about Link and all of the language features that make up Link. So lambda expressions and extension methods and all these things that we've I was a C# MVP before I got to Microsoft, and I just know that as the C# MVP crowd, we were trying to all figure it out together. But it was just a very large language release, and on this release, it's not a huge language release. There are, you know, important language features. There's, you know, dynamic, there's named and optional parameters in C#, where taking some features that have been in Visual Basic for a long time, in Visual Basic taking some features that have been in C# for a long time, but not really, other than like dynamic, there's not really anything, you know, huge in the languages. Nothing just absolutely enormous. And so we've taken that and decided, you know, taking the time and the resources that we've had to build more editor features, right? More when we try and tell the story of Visual Studio as we're designing, you know, this release and thinking through this release, we really want to go after that code focused kind of developer, the developer that, you know, spends most of their days, you know, writing code, and what can we do to make their lives easier. And so one of the big features that we haven't mentioned yet is the generate from usage feature. And you see this in, you know, in ReSharper and CodeRush, the idea that I can consume my code, my APIs, before I actually declare them. So, you know, I can, and you see this especially in test-driven development is a great example of this, where I'm writing my tests that I'm going to test before I actually write that code, before I go, you know, I use the classes before I go and declare them. The idea behind generate from usage is then you write that code, and then instead of having then to go and declare it, we offer smart tags and things in the editor that will go and generate stubs for those. So for classes and you know, any kind of type, any kind of member, we'll generate stubs for that. And we'll generate, you know, it's kind of tailored, especially to the test-driven development kind of story. So that if I'm in my test project, you can build things, you can generate things to another project, the one that you're testing. And I'm finding that though that I'm using it not as much for test-driven development and more for convenience. It's actually speeding up my coding. So I'm just writing code, and then, you know, I don't care to go and you know, right-click on the Solution Explorer or bring up the add new item dialog, but actually just, you know, write my code and then press Control Dot to bring up the smart tag and go create the file for me. That's something that we spend an awful lot of time on. It's in, to put it also in C# and Visual Basic, because we don't want to, in Visual Studio 2010, we have a kind of this philosophy that we don't want to introduce big new features in one language and not have them in the other. So kind of trying to keep those co-evolving together. So that's some of the things we've done in that space. Also, another feature on IntelliSense that is more for the code-focused kind of development, especially in consume-first development, is a new mode for IntelliSense. And I'm just going to apologize to you guys in advance, because this is not a very discoverable feature. Or rather, in Beta 1, it's a little too discoverable and kind of irritating, because if IntelliSense in C# will show the shortcut at the top of the statement completion list all the time that says Control Alt Space. And it's just reminding you that this feature is there because we wanted you to, you know, see it in Beta 1 and give us feedback. But I'm kind of concerned the feedback will be, you know, take this, you know, damn shortcut off my statement completion list. It's driving me insane. But what this does is it enables a mode for IntelliSense that doesn't hinder you as you type. So if I'm in the classic examples in test-driven development, if I happen to be in a class called, like, say I'm building a customer class and I want to write my tests first, I start with my test fixture and I call that customer tests. Now I write my first test method, and in there I say, hey, var c equals, or, you know, customer c equals new customer. But when I press space, as I type customer and press space, IntelliSense will complete, of course, customer tests. And so we introduce this mode for IntelliSense where it won't insert those kinds of things when you press space or anything other than tab. So there are a whole bunch of features like that. They're all over the IDE. I'm going to recommend, Kevin, that you install Beta 1 and check it out and see if we've met your expectations.
I did in fact install it today and started playing.
Okay.
The TDE, I wouldn't know. The TDE friendly stuff is huge to me. I mean, that's like a huge improvement.
Yeah. So that's something that we really went after. So.
What about in terms of code navigation? This is the other area where you know, tools like ReSharp are like just make me hugely more productive. You know, just getting around the code, you know, easily jumping from class to class. You know, ReSharper has, you know, go to type by name. It has, you know, you pick an interface, show me everybody that implements this interface. If I had a method to an interface, I can say, just go and add it to everybody that implements that interface, and I don't need to worry about it. I mean, those kinds of like frictionless sort of navigation and editing things are the kind of tools that I want right out of the box. Mm-hmm. That I currently have to go to ReSharper for.
Well, or Code Rush. Or Visual Sys.
Code Rush.
Or, yeah. This is a third-party friendly interview. So we already mentioned one of those, right? The new Navigate 2 feature. That's in Visual Studio 2010 that if you press Control Comma, it brings up a window that'll allow you to navigate to any type member file very quickly. And it's not even about search so much as it's about navigating fast, right? I'm hoping that the vast majority of people that spend their time in the code editor will be spending most of their time pressing Control Dot to bring up smart tags and Control Comma to bring up the Navigate 2 dialog to bounce around code. That's kind of the model I see people using. There are a couple other features that that you can make use of to kind of get to those same kind of places. We're still working on this stuff, and we still have lots of things we want to do in future releases. So it's, you know, the whole story's not there yet, but There's a call hierarchy window as well. So if you sort of like the call browser that's in C++, if you're familiar with that, but it's the idea that I can take a method call or a property access or something in my code, right click and then add that to a window and then be able to see all the things that call this, all the things that it calls and then be able to continue to navigate through that graph of method calls. That's something that's new in C# in Visual Studio 2010. There's also a feature which is really popular, and it's kind of a staple, right? But it's something that we didn't have in Visual Studio 2010. It's the idea of highlighting references. So if I place my editor caret on an identifier and just wait a second or just a fraction of a second, and then it automatically highlights all the references to that identifier, and you can I think press Control Shift up and down. Man, I'm just remembering these shortcuts by the skin of my teeth here. But Control Shift up and down to navigate between them. Skin of my pants is almost what I said, but I caught myself on mixing the metaphor. But I'm glad you pointed it out, John.
I think it's innovative.
Yeah, it is. Skin of my pants. The skin of my pants. It's kind of filthy, actually, now I think about it. So
you've been talking about cool features that have been added in.
I've been talking a lot, man.
Yes. So, but before you were at Microsoft, you worked for, as you said, 5 years doing all kinds of crazy stuff on top of what Visual Studio provided as a vendor. Is there stuff that you're looking at as you're building this out that you're saying, this is not stuff that we're going to build as you know, Microsoft. We're not going to build this feature, but some vendor could just add in some awesome stuff here. Like, you know what I mean? Is there any interesting things that you've built out support for that you just are excited about? Super excited?
I wouldn't say there's things that we should... Have I said super excited yet?
No, you have not. It's unfortunate.
Okay, because I was going to ask you to edit that out. It should be stricken from the English language. I'm super excited. There's nothing that I would say that I've looked at and said, oh, you know, these guys do that, or this is something that a great third party could do that we've officially said, oh, let's not do it for that reason. It might have been something, you know, there have been things that where it might have been too expensive, and we said, well, you know, maybe a third party could come along and do this. The extension points are there, but, you know, we don't have time to do it or something like that. But yeah, I don't think there's been anything in the IDE that I've just said, you know, hey, we can't do that because, you know, I want somebody else to do it. Really, we've looked at features and said, hey, these are the core things. We need to do these things. There's a long list right now of things that we feel like should be in the box, right? That should be part of Visual Studio that aren't today. And we're getting closer with Visual Studio 2010.
Okay, so. I think I asked that question poorly then, because what I'm thinking about is like, well, there were things that you over the, you know, in your previous work that you kept running into issues probably where you just could not do something that you wanted to do. And are there some things
absolutely.
Now, so there's probably some things now that you've kind of turned on or enabled based on pain you've experienced in your previous life that, you know, like, so, you know what I mean? Some cool new, like, abilities that are just, you're like, oh man, I wish I had this, you know?
There's a lot of that, like, actually. Okay. Yeah. I understand your question now, John, and there's a ton of it, right? So at DevExpress and CodeRush, I was kind of the geeky guy that did most of the plumbing to, like, paint on the editor and some of those things, right? That we were doing on the native editor in Visual Studio, 2002 all the way up to 2008. And so today, to know that it's just a WPF editor that I can stick adornments into, that I can replace IntelliSense really easily if I wanted, you know, things like that that were just insanely difficult to do on the native editor. The extension points weren't there at all. If I were at one of those companies today, I would be excited, right? There's so much you can do. And really, there were places in the editor before where at CodeRush we had ideas of things we wanted to do, but they were just too expensive. Like, you know, or they would require, you know, too much hackery under the covers to make it work. I don't think that's a problem today. I think that's going to go away especially with the WPF editor. Does that answer your question?
It definitely does. Yep. Thanks.
Okay.
Are you guys actually working with those companies to kind of give them early looks and have them give feedback on what kind of extensibility points they need?
Yep, absolutely. So we have contacts with not only those companies, but a wide range of partners that extend Visual Studio, and getting them early looks at things, getting them the support they need. So I know that the groups that I work with, which are, you know, primarily, you know, the JetBrains, the DevExpress, and those guys, that we have, like, specific editor devs set aside to answer questions for them as they come up, because, you know, while the WPF editor is really cool, it's a really big shift, right? And there are things that are just not, it's not, you just have to move your code over to manage in certain cases.
Say, most of the fancy stuff that I see CodeRush do with you know, rewording parameters and they kind of jump around and bounce, switching from the old, you know, Win32 and GDI stuff to doing that in WPF suddenly.
Yeah. Now there's a shim layer. The editor team has built this library of shims on which they implement all the COM interfaces, so that if you still have your native code and you are interacting with the editor through the COM interfaces, you could still do that through the shims in most cases. But yeah, in some of these cases where you were doing all this crazy painting and, you know, grabbing handles and tweaking device context and stuff, that stuff is no longer there, right? There was one interface in particular I remember that had to be we couldn't do a shim because it was it actually had a handle, an H-wind, in, like, one of the methods on the interface, in the COM interface, so we couldn't do anything with it. So depending on how deep you got into things and how much you hacked the editor, that kind of is how much you're going to have to move on to the managed editor APIs or into managed code or WPF.
So my question is kind of broader, I guess.
Yeah.
But it still has to do with IDE features and languages. So we keep putting in more and more, like, helper things. So not just refactoring, but IntelliSense, and we've got, you know, some of the refactoring stuff is built around, I'm thinking primarily of templates and snippets and things like this to save the amount of typing we have to do. And I'm kind of, when I see stuff like that, the first thing that pops into my mind is that it's kind of a language smell. You know, my language is making me write this boilerplate stuff over and over again, or, you know, my language is so huge, or maybe it's just my frameworks are so huge and there's no other way to really discover it. Is, you know, so when you're looking at IDE features like that, do you ever stop back and think, you know, are we really just putting a new coat of paint on IntelliSense, or is there some other way that we could make these interfaces more discoverable, these methods more discoverable within the framework and the IDE? Is there something radical we could do besides, you know, just, oh, look and see what, you know, it starts with, and do a, you know, select from collection where it starts with this.
Yeah, or if you're doing like link, this. Right, from this, do select this. Right.
Yes, the Yodel language, yes.
I think the general problem, I think, that we're seeing there as far as, like, discoverability, especially of, like, framework APIs, is what you're kind of driving at. But I also heard some, like, you were driving at, like, language as well. Right, maybe
yeah,
the concept language are getting too huge.
So we've kind of started with, you know, gigantic, huge property declarations, And then we kind of shortened it to, you know, automatic property declarations. And there's been some talk of, you know, being able to write a shortcut property, auto-implemented property with a backer declared in some manner. And, you know, so I'm wondering, you know, this is that really the – do we just keep shimming and keep, you know, abstracting away the language, or do we need to really, you know, kind of – refactor the language some so that we don't have to do all that junk over and over again. And I'm thinking primarily around generics combined with lambdas. You know, just it's code that just makes my eyes bleed. It's the ugliest stuff when you start getting lambdas with, you know, calling generics and passing in generic parameters and strong. Oh my God. It's almost impossible to read. Let alone understand, you know, how to mock it or anything like that.
Yeah, I definitely hear where you're coming from, and I also know that you're like that Scott, you're well versed in JavaScript and Ruby as well, right? So I can understand even probably a little bit more pain. There is some talk on the language side about how we could make things more concise, and that's kind of the direction we went with like auto implemented properties and even lambda expressions in general. The idea was that they were, and type inference was the idea that, you know, type less, right? C# 2.0 I think was as far as the C# language went, was very heavy as for a lot of typing, right? Lots of curly braces, lots of angle brackets. And I thought C# 3 was kind of a step in the right direction to remove some of that excess noise. You know, when I say new dictionary of list of string of, you know, list of int, and I have, you know, double angle brackets all over the place, and that, yeah, there is thinking going in that direction as far as the languages go. As far as the framework and like the APIs, that's kind of a largish problem, right? Because, you know, as we've seen kind of languages or just programming languages in general develop, we've seen that the programming languages themselves have developed much more slowly than the frameworks and the libraries that we use, right? That's just, you know, if you think back to like 1998 and like now, it's just ridiculous. Like, it's an exponential increase. So, you know, we've tried in the Visual Basic side to try and figure out how we can kind of consolidate that and make it and to package some of that up to give you, you know, I remember we did the My Namespace in Visual Basic 2005, right, to try and, you know, package together some of these APIs and get you to the more common things that you might use all the time. But it's a challenge. It's a challenge to figure out what the right set of APIs are to show to people. Because, I mean, even if you think about, you know, when you press C in IntelliSense in C#, you're just presented with this massive list of things, and trying to figure out what is the right thing to choose can really be a challenge sometimes. I agree with you, Scott. It's a big problem. It's something that we're thinking about, but I'm not sure I have any solutions for it yet. Though I will say that and we talked about this at PDC last year, I love when a language design makes my code more concise. However, I do like it when there's syntactic sugar there. And I say syntactic sugar in a positive way, right? You know, the very term syntactic sugar was originally, you know, coined to mean, you know, something that made my programming sweeter, right? So I love it when I see syntactic sugar, or I use syntactic sugar that makes my code more succinct, right? I have to type less. Or even something as simple as I don't have to type an operator that's really difficult to type anymore. I think the one that I despise the most is the if you've, you know, use VB name parameters or the assignment operator in Pascal, the colon equals, it's just ridiculously hard to type. And so I want to see places in our languages where we actually consider how it is to type those languages, right? I don't know where I'm going with this, what tangent I'm going on this, but it's something to think about. You got a follow up, man?
Can diabetics use syntactic sugar? Do Android
yes, but,
diabetics dream of
Android diabetics?
I was kind of excited to hear about the F# window, but I forget what the name of it was now, but like the REPL window.
Mm-hmm. The F# Interactive.
Interactive. Is that going to be available for any other languages?
Not yet.
Okay.
That's all I'll say.
Well, I'll just give you my feedback that would be really cool to have in other languages.
I agree. One of the things I'm starting to think about is like what that looks like at debug time. What's it mean to have a REPL and debug? right? So, you know, I mentioned earlier that, you know, part of my job is to
I'll save you some time. It looks like small talk.
Yeah, so you're right. It looks like small talk. But I think there's more there. Yeah, so I'm playing with that a lot in my spare time right now, trying to figure out exactly what that looks like in 2009 inside of Visual Studio, like what that looks like in our day and age. And yes, small talk is definitely something I've been toying with again at home. So
one language that just kind of floats around outside the developer space, but is interesting to other people is the PowerShell. That crazy mm-hmm. PowerShell thing. And I wonder if that's something that'll sneak into Visual Studio at some point. Because, people have written PowerShell editors and IDEs, and of course, it's useful in the IT space. I just wonder if that'll sneak into Visual Studio at some point as like a first-class language kind of thing. Or if that maybe that doesn't even make any sense. I don't know.
I think it would be cool. I haven't seen anything, but I think it would be really, really cool. Right, that would be something that I would use.
What does the editor and IntelliSense and all that stuff do with dynamic? I mean, does it do anything? Do you get any sort of, you know, help from the editor with dynamic stuff in C# 4, or are you pretty much, you know, on your own?
Yeah, unfortunately not today, right? That's something that I'm thinking about, right? But it's something you don't get today. So today, if you use dynamic in C#, you'll get no IntelliSense when you dot into something that's of type dynamic, which is actually it's similar to what the experience has always been. We've always had that same experience in Visual Basic when you did late binding, which is kind of similar in concept, right? So unfortunately, no. I want to do something with it, and there's a lot of thinking around that area and what we could do to enable that. Maybe it's IntelliSense live at debug time, right, or something like that. But there's definitely something needs to be done, because I remember I was talking just the other day with somebody, and we were talking about the idea that, you know, if I were in building a Silverlight app, for example, and I was coding against the DOM using dynamic, and I pressed F5 and I realized that I'd spelled something wrong and found that, you know, it didn't work. Well, now I have to stop and fix that and F5 again and it'll restart my entire debugging session. So we were talking about the notion of being able to do things like edit and continue and IntelliSense at debug time with dynamic. And yeah, it's definitely a space to explore, but in Visual Studio 2010, it's not there yet.
Two things that people have complained about just in general in Visual Studio. I don't know if
here they come.
One is the blurry type in Visual Studio 2010, and I think I've heard that this is just it's going to be corrected, but the blurry type thing is something people bring up.
So yes, that is coming. I can you know, definitely say unequivocally it didn't come in beta 1, but it'll actually be in our internal builds very shortly. So we'll be seeing the blurry text go away ourselves. We've complained at the very first dog fooding build internally. That was one of the very first complaints we heard from internal Microsoft users, that it was, hey, I can't use this thing. The text is too blurry. And so that is getting fixed.
That'll play especially poorly with your Atwood crowd.
yeah, and that's a fix on the WPF side, right? So that fix is something that anybody that's building a WPF app essentially will get, right? We'll get that kind of that fix as well.
Okay, and then one
should we beat you up over the add reference dialogue?
That
too?
Was my next question.
I assume that was the next thing it's going to say. Yeah. Oh my good, add reference dialogue. Yeah, you guys can beat us up. It's fair. It is entirely too slow. Though I have to say that the MVPs and influencers have come out in droves. So at the MVP summit this year, I delivered essentially 5 talks, and I heard about the add reference dialogue at every single one of them. And in one of them, we heard about the add reference dialogue before we even got past the first slide. So definitely major point. there is effort going on right now, taking, you know, a look at it and seeing what we can do in Visual Studio 2010 to improve that. And there's obviously there's a lot of things that can be done, right? Whether it's defaulting to the project tab, because that's what everybody does most of the time anyways, or, you know, asynchronously loading the tabs on the background thread or whatever. There is effort going on right now in the platform team taking a look at that and seeing what we can do. So hopefully something will happen. I don't want to be the guy that says, yes, we're doing something, and then get in trouble and, you know, drug through the blogosphere, you know, of doom later. But I do know that voices have been heard.
I've heard one solution is just open up the add references dialog, then open up the toolbox and hit F1. And that, like, activates turbo mode.
Oh, wow. You know, yeah. I'm just gonna
that opens
there.
A time portal.
It opens up a time portal. Okay. Well, actually, what it does is it opens up you some free time because you can't code anymore, right? So you get to go get coffee or whatever, you know, go to the mall, whatever. I mean, you can
get an extra degree.
Yeah, you got
right.
to get time.
Masters.
Yeah, those are the three. You nailed them all right there, right? Toolbox initialization, add reference dialogue, and F1 help complement. Those are the biggies.
I don't mean to bash on you because I love Visual Studio. I do have one other thing that this just brought up to me, which is the weird Visual Studio is busy kind of dialogue, and I don't even know what it's busy with or what it's doing. Is that related to that stuff, or is that team system? I don't even know what's happening when it does that.
So what's happening there is essentially something's going on, right? It's just got – something is taking – there's a long – lived, you know, thread or something that's taking an exceptional amount of time and has taken, but is blocking the UI thread. And so they, instead of showing like a white screen, you know, because the UI thread is blocked, they do this, hey, continue waiting or nothing essentially, right?
Okay.
Your only option is to continue waiting. It's kind of like, you know, it's just this vestige of kind of a poor threaded design, a difficult threaded design, and we're looking at ways to make the IDE more thread agile, right? So that things don't block the UI like that in the future. But yeah, that dialogue bothers me too. I'd like to find the guy that wrote that dialogue.
But like you're saying, I mean, it's covering for a bad. Like the dialogue
it's covering,
itself,
yeah,
is
it's
just,
covering for like yeah. the not ideal situation, right?
Right.
So the other big complaint, which I'll ask you about, even though I'm sure you have nothing to do with it, but
says you guys keep saying the other, like there's one, right?
The other one that I'm going to say right now. Well, okay. So I haven't really heard much about the help system, and if there's major changes afoot there.
There are. Our major phase
Good.
Is a foot. So actually, in beta 1, I'll just say this outright because it's going to cause confusion, and hopefully somebody's listening to the podcast and will hear this and not complain too loudly. But there is no offline help in beta 1, so all of the help is online and will be accessed through your browser. And that's essentially the story we're going to go with for the release of Visual Studio 2010, is that your help will be accessed through the browser. Now we'll ship offline help so that you will have help installed. You can install to disk or whatever, but we'll always go to your default browser, which makes a lot of sense, right? Then you get to use your browser's search capabilities and all those sorts of things that, you know, browsers are really good at. And we get out of the business of building a help viewer and spending a lot of time compiling help for you.
So you're saying that the current help system is just completely gone?
Yes, right now.
Wow.
So there was an effort to rebuild that and shape it into something new. And it was just determined later. It was like, you know what? Internet Explorer does a great job at this, you know. Other browsers do a great job at this. Let's just leverage that. So, and you know, the startup time for those browsers is fast, right? It's in, you know, much faster than the existing help viewer. So,
that's great. I mean, I think that represents one of the, like, how much has changed since Visual Studio, you know, started out. That. You know, in general, your users have internet connections. They have most of them pretty fast internet connections, and they don't want to install gigabytes and a, you know, kind of slow HTML viewer. They'd rather just use a up-to-date browser and access all the internet tubes.
Right, and so we were always moving that in direction, right? You could always say, you know, hey, I want to use online help as my preferred method, right? I don't want to install it. I don't want to use it on my disk. Although some people preferred that, you know, but then just taking that next step and saying, hey, you know what? I'm used to seeing, you know, most people bring up their browser and type Google or Live or Kumo, right? Immediately, much faster than
Ask
bringing
Jeeves.
Up help. Right? Ask Jeeves, exactly. Lycos, right? and so it just made a lot of sense to just kind of leverage that, right? Leverage what people were already doing. So if you're used to going to msdn.microsoft.com already within your browser, then, you know, hey, more power to you. We'll just send you to the right place.
So, Dustin, as we're wrapping up here, is there anything else you want to talk about? Anything you want to plug?
I do want to plug one thing, and it's kind of a, you know, it's something that we've been working on for a while. So we just released into the wild we didn't release it. Developer Express released this free tool, CodeRush Express, which is kind of, for a long time, we've been in partnership with Developer Express back in 2005. And I remember I was at Developer Express at the time and I worked on this tool, which was the refactor for Visual Basic, to give refactoring support to Visual Basic users, because at that time, the Visual Basic team just, they didn't have the resources to build it into the product. And so for a number of years, they relied on this free refactoring tool that DevExpress built, and which is, you know, I will say, when I built it, it was, you know, when I worked on it, it was awesome. Then at PDC this last October, DevExpress did we continued to partner with DevExpress. They released a product called CodeRush Express for C#, which was intended to provide productivity features, some test-driven development features, and a few refactorings. Well, so then last week at TechEd, those guys combined the two. Right, so there's CodeRush Express and there's Refactor for VB. Now there's just CodeRush Express, which has it's like this giant Uber tool for free that has like 60 plus refactorings absolutely for nothing. And that's at devexpress.com/CRX. So, and we're super excited about it because oh my gosh, I said super excited. We're very, very excited about it. I totally did that on purpose. We're super excited about it. It's just an amazing tool, and I hope, you know, your listeners will go grab it.
Great. Okay.
And that's all.
That's all she wrote. All right. Well, thanks a bunch for taking the time to talk to us.
It's a lot of fun, guys.
Great. Okay. We'll catch you next week on the Herding Code.
Okay, so you're saying
so
you're, like
but
the,
you like
oh. you like the double interview. You like both of us asking questions
at the
right?
same time.
Is it distracting?
More, I think he likes it. The double interview.
Yeah. Double. There are two.
Two
times as
same
good.
Same time.
10 times as good with two people, three people, including you.
Absolutely, it's a lot of fun, guys. Yeah.